Karen Webster for payments.com, and I'm here today with Nash Ali, the Vice President of Data Sciences and Product at Socure. Nash, thanks for joining me today.
Oh, you're welcome, Karen. Thanks for taking the time.
So we're going to talk about something both timely, interesting, and I think just an area of payments and financial services that is very much in the news, and that's KYC and all of the things around KYC in now our digital environment, which I think makes KYC both critically important but also more complicated to deliver accurately for reasons we're going to talk about and dig into in the next few minutes. But let's start with this, for example. So the OCC is now even recommending, clarifying their guidelines, that KYC should extend to reloadable prepaid cards. Makes sense. But I think it shows, I guess, the recognition on the part of the regulators that financial instruments, not even the traditional bank account and credit and checking account products, are now subject to KYC. I think that's just an indication of how important it's become. What's your thinking on that topic and the importance of KYC now in the digital world?
Yep, great question, Karen. So, as you mentioned, KYC is broadening to include really all financial services and instruments. That's the mandate. And with that, it becomes even more important for financial institutions to have preciseness, precision in their KYC process, and also look broadly at a hot topic these days, which is financial inclusion. Mm-hmm. Both of those are driving the importance of KYC to become the forefront of any risk management practice. And with that said, you look at what companies are doing today to put KYC programs in place, and with the increasing pressure with consumers moving to the mobile world, the way KYC is performed also has and is starting to transform to include new technologies, new data sources, and new methods of performing that KYC.
So just sticking with prepaid as kind of an example, and you make a good point that KYC is now being extended across all financial services instruments, isn't there a relationship between knowing your customer and knowing what they're doing with the financial instrument that obviously the bank needs to authenticate is being used for the appropriate reason? So, you know, anti-money laundering activities, for example. Can you explain the relationship, again, thinking about the digital construct that we're talking about, between KYC and AML?
Yeah, absolutely. So AML, anti-money laundering, most institutions put an AML program in place that has at least the three primary tenets. First and foremost, it is identifying and verifying that consumer's identity that you want to do business with. The second tenet being monitoring that consumer's ongoing transactional activity through the lifetime of that relationship. And third tenet being reporting any suspicious activity to the appropriate regulatory body. So those three pieces kind of come together and couple together to become the anti-money laundering program that most financial institutions will put in place. Now, let's take each of those three pieces. The first piece, which is the identity verification process, that is really where there's been sort of this movement over the last few years, especially because traditionally what financial institutions have done to verify a consumer's identity is to rely on credit bureau data. That credit bureau data is aggregated by the likes of Experian, Equifax, TransUnion from consumers through the lifetime of their credit activity, whether they've applied for a loan or opened a card. The problem with using those traditional methods has typically been financial inclusion. And what I mean by that is there's consumers that are just coming of age, millennials, immigrants, people who do not have thick credit files, and in some cases they don't have any credit files. And those consumers cannot be verified very well with traditional credit bureau data. And so that's where the gap starts to occur. And you now start to exclude a segment of population from their ability to do business with a bank, open a card, open a financial instrument. So that's the first aspect. The second aspect of monitoring customers' ongoing transactional activity, that's really with a focus on fraud mitigation as well. And there you start to look at things like account takeovers and losses associated with financial fraud.
So I want to go back to, I think, the first point, which is we're in a new world where digital is obviously now something that defines the way financial services are consumed by people and businesses, of course. And yet I heard you talk about the way that we're validating the identity of a consumer is using the same tools that we've been using before digital was even something we should thought that we should be caring a lot about. How do you close the gap without putting in jeopardy the whole notion of authenticating with accuracy and reliability the identity of a consumer?
Yeah, absolutely. So let's think about what financial institutions have traditionally done. The method they've used to identify a consumer, to verify a consumer's identity, has been to collect some basic information from them. Even if they're not actually present in person, they're sitting behind a keyboard or a mobile device, they've typically filled out a form that provides basic pieces of their identity information. These are things like name, address, phone, email, an ID number, whether it's your driver's license or social security number in the U.S., etc. When they submit that information, the financial institution then takes that and passes that information to a credit bureau that then returns information in terms of scores back to that financial institution and says, yes, this consumer's name and address match with what's in the credit bureau data. And that helps that financial institution then get a level of confidence that they are actually doing business with the right person. There's a second element to this, which is to validate that this consumer is someone they can actually do business with. And that's usually done by matching that consumer's information against industry watch lists. Now, these watch lists are lists that are published by the Fed, by other regulatory agencies. These are typically lists like the Office of Foreign Assets Control, the OFAC lists, or terrorist lists, or politically exposed persons lists, sanctions lists, etc. People who appear on these lists, financial institutions are prohibited from doing business with those people, so they verify that consumer against these lists to make sure that this is someone that they can actually do business with. Now, for the first portion of the identity check, more and more institutions are finding that they can take alternate data sources and still get the type of correlation information that they need to verify that their consumer's identity is indeed representative of a real person. Alternate data sources alongside credit bureau data that will help them make a smarter decision and a quick decision in real time allows them to actually do business with the person.
So I want to go back to a word that you used, which I want to make sure we all understand appropriately. You mentioned something about correlation. So, I mean, correlation sounds squishy to me. You know, I'm not a data scientist, but correlation sounds like it could be a little squishy. You're putting it together a bunch of different disparate data sources. how does that actually help the KYC fraud prevention aspect of what you're trying to accomplish as a financial institution in validating the identity of a consumer?
Great question. So when it comes to identity verification, correlation plays a huge part. And let me explain what I mean by that. Usually you've got a few different elements of an identity. You've got your first name, last name, you've got an address, you've got a phone number, maybe a couple of phone numbers, an email address. There are interesting attributes when you try to do identity verification with these elements where you start to look at relationship between that name versus that address or that name versus that phone. Have you ever seen this information appear together as reported by other data sources, whether it's credit data or even if you're using alternate data, can that data corroborate that this name and this address are tied together, or this name and phone number, they're tied together, and how strongly are they coupled? That correlation then becomes proof that this identity and these elements do go together and they represent a real consumer. Now, in the bureau-based world, that data is typically provided by a credit bureau saying, yes, we have a level of confidence that we've seen this name and this address together, or this name and this phone number together. And companies have even used what we've called knowledge-based authentication questions, KBA. And you've seen this before where you try to apply for a credit card and you get these multiple choice questions thrown at you. You know, what was the amount of your loan that you took out on your car, or what was the color of your car? These are questions based, again, on your credit data. They help establish that you're the real person as a second factor of authentication beyond those correlation scores. In the world of alternate data, companies like Socure, as an example, are looking at pulling this type of correlation information, name, address, name, phone, name, email, NAP scores, as we call them, or NAPE scores. These types of information can also be corroborated by, for example, your digital exhaust. Think about each of us. We have presence online, whether it's on social sites like Facebook, LinkedIn, or non-social sites, white pages and directories out there. You do a Google search on yourself and you can find a lot of information about a person. This is public data, and yet it's strong data that helps identify whether these names, addresses, phone numbers, emails do appear on these digital sites, and these sites can actually serve as proof that this data correlates together, correlates well, how strongly does it correlate, and can it serve as a secondary factor of authentication, as an example, to what companies are already pulling from the bureau.
Got it. So it seems to me that it's kind of hard to fake your digital identity in many ways. You can't fake your Facebook profile or your Twitter account, because you either have that established for a period of time with friends and followers, or you don't. Is that, for example, some of the input that you look at?
Absolutely, and that's really the strength of looking at digital as a secondary method of authenticating a consumer. So when you think about it, if a person wants to commit fraud, they can even go so far as to establish a LinkedIn account using a synthetic ID or a taken-over identity. They can establish their presence on LinkedIn or Facebook. However, what's really hard to spoof is the behavior of a consumer on these sites. So you and I have an established history on LinkedIn where we have a profile. We've connected with people over the last several years. We've got our job history and education history, and we've got posts that we've put out there. This type of behavior is what's very hard to replicate, and it's built over time. So when you model against this behavior on social sites and non-social sites out there in the online world, you can create an identity profile for any individual with a great level of confidence. And then that serves as proof point on that identity.
Got it. So you're saying that the suspicious LinkedIn invitations I get from, you know, the royal family in Saudi Arabia, probably not really authentic.
I think we've all received these emails that have left large amounts of money to none but us, and yes, I would steer you far away from investing in any of those scams.
Yeah, the emails I'm pretty wise to. It is kind of funny to see the LinkedIn invitations from the royal family of this country or that country that I've never really quite heard of. But anyway, the fraudsters are very sophisticated and they know how to use digital tools. Sounds like you know how to use digital tools as well to suss out the good guys from the bad guys.
Yes, and it's an interesting evolution, Karen. So we've seen the evolution of credit bureau data move to KBA, as I mentioned, as a second factor of auth. We've seen companies employ additional tools in their AML stack that help them get additional detail about a consumer, whether it's data from utilities or publicly aggregated data. They've used second and third factor authentication, biometrics more and more recently. And the real emerging thing that is so cool right now is the ability for us to take data from the digital world, which we're all part of, and more the adoption in the digital age is rapidly increasing. So our children and future generations, they're all going to be 100% digital. And so being able to tap into that digital data and create consumer authentication methods out of that and use that to perform KYC is really where we see the world going, and this is going to be the new method of KYC.
So speaking of where the world's going, Canada seems to have embraced exactly what you're describing in new regulations that will happen in July, FinTrack. Why don't you give us the rundown on that, which is really about taking a very progressive stance around KYC, and once you get through that, I want to get your perspective on whether you see that as a bellwether for how other countries may be thinking about their own regulatory constructs.
Sure. Yeah, so it is interesting to see Canada take a progressive stance in the KYC space. What FinTrack, which is Canada's financial intelligence agency, announced literally on Tuesday was the ability for Canadian financial institutions to now use a dual method of verification to perform KYC. Beyond just the traditional bureau-based verification, Canadian financial institutions are now able to use non-bureau-based data solely to perform KYC. So they can use the type of digital data that I was mentioning earlier to perform KYC in entirety. They do not need to rely solely on the bureau-based data. And it's an interesting shift from for financial institutions to be able to use this alternate data now, which allows them to chase after these very lucrative consumer segments that have typically not been able to bank with them or apply for a financial instrument simply because they didn't have bureau-based data on these individuals. So this is a game changer as it relates to financial inclusion.
Yeah, it sounds like a big breakthrough. Now, given that there's a regulation that says they can do it, do you think that means they will do it?
Well, we're already seeing this actually come about. As you look at the interest this has garnered from financial institutions, we at Socure have already seen companies reaching out to us to see how they can utilize this duality and the digital data to perform KYC. So there's going to be huge adoption of this. We're starting to see that already. And to your earlier question, I absolutely see this as a model that more and more countries will start to adopt The U.S. is already starting to look at this, and so are other Western European countries, and I see more and more countries moving to a model that will allow them to use non-bureau data for KYC.
Yeah, no, I think it's, you know, there's a whole generation of people who are very credit worthy but don't necessarily have the thick files, as you describe them, to prove that. So having the ability to do what you describe, you know, correlating all of these pieces of digital data together to provide that that identity verification is obviously a really big step. And it sounds like Canada has satisfied itself that that presents little risk to the financial institution as well.
Exactly. And, you know, they're setting the precedent. The world is watching closely as this comes about in Canada, and we'll be using their success to replicate that model, which is why I believe that this will become the universal model globally in due course. Canada is the first mover. I strongly suspect that U.S. will be it will be following that in the very near future as well.
Wow. Well, this was a fascinating conversation, Ash. I really enjoyed being brought up to speed on some of the challenges, but also the opportunities of looking at KYC in a digital environment and all of the new tools that make it a possibility for people whose identity was challenging to authenticate and validate in the past, but who now have the potential to take advantage of financial services that they weren't able to before. Thanks for your time.
You bet. It's my pleasure. Thank you.